Well, very quickly, out of respect for time, I think most of you know, but in case you didn't, I'm very honored that this is the first undersecretary dedicated solely to trade and foreign agricultural affairs. And I hope that we're honoring the vision of so many people that wanted this by A, being more nimble, being out there a great deal, meaning around the world, and always being vigilant, trying to open up trade. I don't know what the last count is. I think we're at 350,000 miles or so on my million-mile trek. That was the goal set by Secretary Perdue. We've been to, 15 to 17 countries now, and we'll rack up several more by the end of the year. It is not by chance that more of those than not are newer countries that we know but may not have known, like perhaps we have our larger trading partners, and that is by design. And I think we are making headway, albeit slowly. Just to open some comments, no doubt China is probably on your mind. And I think you know, or if you've read, we are in the middle of developing some sort of a mitigation program, a different mitigation program. And I do think that's going to come far sooner than perhaps, some of the lay press reported. We're working very diligently, all of us. This is an all-hands-on-deck kind of thing, at the President and Secretary Perdue's request, so that we can give immediate relief, immediate and long-term. There's some market development in there, too, for our farmers and ranchers. It is unfortunate that the disagreement was realized with China. It's probably not surprising. I will tell you that discussions on ag had gone well. We were pleased, but I'll never forget, we were on a digital video conference, and I looked at Mr. Dowd, and he looked at me, and we said, this is different, and we sensed this backsliding starting. And then we compared our notes with other teams. So there was distinctly a change of views by our friends in China. But that doesn't mean we're mad at them. We do believe. We still believe. I am still optimistic that we're going to get there. And I read that the president, he committed, I think, that he'll be visiting with President Xi Jinping on the margins of the G20. And that's a good thing. If you're still talking, it's a good thing. So I'm optimistic because I think China really does need the U.S., and certainly we need and want them. So we're working through these things, but I think I still am optimistic that we will get there. In the meantime, we're focusing on all of the things. I think you'll hear more from Greg Dowd about Japan, but that is a high, high priority. USMCA is a very high priority. I would say both the administration, but mostly our customers, farmers, ranchers, processors, are out working on members of Congress to share the truth about USMCA. It is a good deal. We do have more dairy access. We did get wheat straightened out. British Columbia, we're now looking at cage-free wines. Can you imagine that? So I think that is very good. And I encourage you to not forget that I think the greatest value of USMCA is the brand new chapter on the biosciences that does not exist in any other trade relationship. It's probably not as easy as a cut and paste into other agreements, but when you've got the language and it's good and solid, it is a great place to start from. Do not forget the sanitary, phytosanitary chapters. Around the world, and I've seen this in almost, not quite, but almost every country I've been to, the sanitary, phytosanitary language, or lack thereof, is the soft underbelly where we can get the shaft. I'm very proud of how, now we may not be perfect, but we are still a fairly free and open and market-oriented country. If you prove the product that you want to ship here is safe and effective, and it passes muster, and it's not an easy process with our friends at APHIS, or in the case of meats and poultry with FSIS, generally it comes in, and it is categorically not the same in return. So the cause is just in terms of our travels and our trying to straighten out this trade, because it is categorically unfair, and a great deal of that soft underbelly, that wiggle room, that opportunity to sleight of hand is in the SPS chapters. And so the fact that USMCA has that new, improved, is yet another opportunity we have. It's a very important tool in the toolbox, so we're going to get there. The EU, I am one that wants to advocate and have been advocating that we try and try and try again to work with them. But as you know, it takes two to tango. And so far, we're getting the old Heisman football forearm saying no. And I believe the precautionary principle has a stranglehold on Europe, and I don't see it letting go. So it is not a pleasant time right now, but that doesn't mean that you stop, because there is so much more that binds that continent and the U.S. that we cannot forget. But I'm also very supportive and have been advocating as much with Congress and the administration and others that we better have ag in the deal, and I'm hearing that echoed back. So I think we're in good stead there, that if there's going to be a deal, ag has to be a part of that. I'm going to stop there and take your questions, because I think it's more germane. Hi, Jeff.
Good to see you. Thanks for your work. What does it say to China, knowing that their retaliation to us is targeted toward agriculture? What does it say to China when the president and the ag secretary so quickly say they're going to step in and support farmers in this fight?
Sure. Well, from my standpoint, I'm grateful and even very grateful that the president was so quick on that, as was Secretary Perdue. They are like minds on that. And it's a way of saying, don't use our farmers as you did before and as other countries have to be the tip of your spear when you're angry or you want to make a statement to the U.S. We're going to protect agriculture, notably farmers and ranchers. So I was very pleased and relieved. Now, in truth, do we want that? Do farmers and ranchers want that? No, none of us want it. But we're grateful that it's there as a way of saying, until we straighten out some of these inadequacies, these unfair trade practices, we're going to at least give our farmers and ranchers a backstop. And so I'm very grateful. I hope the message is sent, don't go use ag every time, because we're going to watch their backs. We've got their backs.
Morning, Mr. Undersecretary. You mentioned that some kind of trade mitigation package might be coming sooner rather than what was previously reported. I'm wondering if you could handicap a potential delivery date, as well as what exactly is the department envisioning? Is it similar to the $15 billion in food aid that the president suggested via Twitter, or is it more similar to last year's kind of three-headed monster with the three different parts of that package?
Three-headed monster. I'll remember that. Thank you. I'll let others, but I think it's more like days, not weeks, months. So that's as close as I can get, because I don't want to get out ahead of the secretary or the president. But the intent is to be quick, because we want to send a powerful message to first our farmers and ranchers and the ag world, but also to our friends around the world, that ag is not up for debate. The diversity, the portfolio, if I can use, I think is going to be very diverse. I don't want to get into specifics, but it's all the above. We're still finalizing it, and so some pieces may come and go, ebb and flow. But we're looking at all of those things. Some of the types of programs that you saw in the three-headed monster, your words, not mine, thanks. But also other things, because we want to be robust, and we want to make sure that farmers really get the message that while trade is preferred, the administration has their backs, given the strife they've been through over these last many, many months. So it's an all-of-the-above strategy, and you're going to see some new things, and you'll see some traditional or some things like we did before. I wish I could get more detail, but let's finish it, and then I can be more accurate and credible with you.
Is the $15 billion something we can rely on?
I thought the president tweeted 15 to 20, but it's in that range. And again, those can ebb and flow depending on the realities. For example, I think the president, he had a vision of feed the world. Well, that's a very, very tall task with Jones Act and the experience that we've had. So I think that'll be a part of it, but it's not going to be the majority of that. So that's why I'm saying it's going to be a mix of all the above, so that we use all the tools in the toolbox. Yes.
Mr. Secretary, the President talked about buying commodities from farmers that would have been sold to China. And that brought back memories of grain reserves.
Yes.
Are we going down that road?
We do not want to do anything that would hurt possible potential commercial sales. So I think the answer is largely no. I'll just leave it at that. We do not want to harm the potential for sales that bring monies to people's pockets. Yeah, yeah.
Hi, Abby Taylor with Southeast Magnet Radio Network.
Hi, Abby.
In regards to the USMCA,
yeah.
Florida and Georgia farmers are not happy with how it's written. The University of Georgia just released an impact statement saying that that deal as written is going to cause many issues for Georgia farmers and several Georgia rural communities.
Yes.
And I know that Florida also shares their struggles in that. Is there any plan for, you know, that to be, that issue to be addressed at all?
Well, I don't see a great deal of changes to USMCA. Now, I understand members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are suggesting some things, but it's just very difficult to reopen the whole thing. I think sometimes there are letters on the sidelines. I'm not suggesting that's happening. I'm just saying that is a possibility. But I don't see major changes. My sense is that there are other ways that that can be addressed. For example, I think you're aware that the Department of Commerce has made changes to the tomato suspension agreement. I don't think tomatoes was the sole source of concern from the southeastern United States, but it was one of the, if not the major ones. I think it's things like that that may be less related to USMCA than more related, but who knows? You know, you tell me how Congress will introduce language or not, and then we'll have an answer. But I don't have that right now. I don't see major changes in USMCA. I don't think our partners to the north and south are going to go for that.
Are you guys expecting any pushback from Florida Georgia legislators?
I don't know. I'm notwithstanding my love, and I spent a lot of time in the Hill over my many years, I don't get up there much. They keep me outside the U.S. selling stuff. So I don't know the answer. I don't know if Office of Congressional Relations is going to be here or not, but they might be able to answer that question. I know there's a lot of attention being paid to them because you need every vote. Most of you know that trade votes are usually 10, 15, a swing of 10 or 15. It's not, they're not wide majorities. So every vote counts for sure. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I'll let
That's
you turn.
Okay.
Yeah. How are you today? It's good to see you.
Just wanted to ask, we've been hearing all along USMCA needs to be the first domino to drop here. Is that the case in your mind, that USMCA needs to be the first trade deal to get through? Or at this point, is it just whatever happens to come through, comes through? Obviously, we're looking for something with Japan here.
Well, I don't mean to be cute, but it's both. If USMCA comes, it sends a powerful signal to the world that we will and can deliver on negotiated trade agreements, including those that require congressional approval. So that is an absolutely true statement. At the same time, if for some reason Japan, or if we kiss and make up properly and they with us, with China, and that falls first, I'll take any one of them. I'll take them all three. But those three, clearly, we've got to land and land successfully, and the timing is just going to be determinant on so many, many other factors. But for sure, any of those, whenever they come, are going to be welcomed.
And just a quick follow-up with China. Spoke with an Indiana farmer that you know, Kendall Kelt.
Yes.
He's afraid that even if we get a deal with China here in the short term, that the lingering effects of this will go through multiple growing seasons. Is that your feeling as well?
I don't know. For sure, we've got a backlog of grains and crops. Notably soybeans. That is true. And we know that we're now well into half of the season where Brazil tends to ship more than the U.S. So there may be some of that. Longer term, I remain hopeful. You look at what is going to happen to China if and when they fix African swine fever. They're going to be modernizing their pork, and I would dare say probably poultry industry, significantly. And they're going to need protein. And we know that soy meal, there are other forms, DDGs, but soy meal is one of the finest sources of protein. And I do think they're going to need us. Plus, I'll tell you, notwithstanding how the optics look outside, the relationship between U.S. Department of Ag, and I think by extension USTR, and the Ministry of Ag and Rural Affairs in China is pretty good. I mean, the relationship was strong. It was a fairly trusting relationship. Now, our counterpart, Vice Minister Han Jun, had to work within his boundaries, you know. There's instructions that come above for all of us. But I hope the tone, the tenor that we heard from Vice Premier Liu He and the tone and tenor we heard from Ambassador Lighthizer and even our president and Secretary Perdue, I hope that is a tone and tenor that can continue on through this and we can get back to normalcy. But temporary, yeah, there's probably some temporary backlog, if I can use that word. You might use another better word. Mm-hmm.
Kara? I wanted to follow up with the EU trade talks.
Yes.
How does the administration see a path forward in including agriculture in those trade discussions?
I don't know. We want to engage. The EU continues to say they will not engage. And so something's going to have to break loose, I would say, more on the EU side for us to get there. I think it's a little disingenuous, maybe even a lot disingenuous to say because we, Europe, bought some soy that satisfies all of the requirements they had made with the president. Come on, they took advantage of much lower market prices. That's not a good trading relationship. I think that's disingenuous. So I think they're going to have to do better than that. Ultimately, I hope cooler heads prevail. It may be that they'll have to get through their elections and see where that goes with some new blood. But if we don't stop and realize, or they don't stop and realize, that there is a great deal to be gained from a very strong relationship with the U.S., this is not going to be a pretty picture for some time to come. I do not believe that's the case. I think we'll get there, but I think we're going to have to look at our friends in Europe. I've been over there many times. I'll just give an example. I chided them the last time I was there. I've been there four times to the one time they were here. You tell me how equal that relationship is. We've been flat in our exports of ag to Europe for some time. Theirs continue to grow. Tell me whose court the ball is in. That's a rhetorical statement.
Mr. Undersecretary Ron Hayes out of Oklahoma City, let's talk Japan if we might.
Yes.
I know that we're waiting on some final language from them, some protocol regarding the 30-month rule.
Yes.
And be getting closer to that.
Yes.
And then secondly, you know, where are we on really being able to get something done agricultural specific when it comes to catching up on tariffs?
Sure. Well, first of all, the administration absolutely gets and understands that ag is at the fore. They know that tariff reductions are occurring through the TPP-11. There's the more sophisticated name. I call it TPP-11. So I think on the part of the administration, there's a keen desire to get something done. But once again, it takes two to tango. I have not talked to them, but I have read their own foreign minister's statement that elections, I think it's one of the two chambers, have July elections, and they'd like for that not to get in the way. I'm not going to second guess whether that's a real statement or if it's a stall statement. I don't know. But I also believe that Japan does realize the strength of this relationship. They really do. I've been there. I was in the ambassador's home when the foreign minister introduced the new ambassador to the U.S. There were three or four of us from the U.S. All of the others were Japanese businessmen. Sure, they chided us for stepping out of TPP, but it was a warm and friendly, you know, much like you'd kid with a friend or a neighbor or something. And so the second thing is they know and love and respect the quality, the quantity, and the safety of our product. There's not a question about what they get from the U.S., and that goes a long way. And third, I'll say that many of the buyers over there are hanging with us. They are paying above the tariff to keep bringing in U.S. product because of the things I just described and maybe a few others. So time is slipping. We've got to get it done. But I still think there's a chance for us to revive that relationship and even grow on it over time. Did I answer all your questions?
The 30-month rule.
Oh, they are moving on that. And I don't know the timeline. They don't share that. But I do think it's very likely. And I think that will be a powerful signal and a decision that can be leveraged with other parts of the world, including China. It was very much a part of our discussions with China. So I think we'll get there. Sooner is better than later. How's that?
We have a few minutes left.
Rob Winters, Wobo Radio.
Hi, Fort Rob. Wayne. How's Fort Wayne?
Not a protocol. First of all, thanks for granting me all the times that I've called you up and asked for a conversation. When last we talked, you said that one of the reasons for your job is because we put too many eggs in the basket of China, and so now you're getting pretty busy trying to make up a deficit. So a couple of things that we've spoken of in the past. The nations that we were engaged with in TPP,
yes.
And kind of what is the goal going
yes.
forward to, you know, get back in bed with them, if you will,
yes.
On bilateral agreements. We've
yes.
already done some good work there. But one of the other things that you've mentioned, too, has been the opportunities in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could kind of expound on both of those, where we're
yes.
heading with those.
Yes. So just a comment about the larger countries that we currently partner with, China, Japan, Canada, Mexico, Taiwan, you know, et cetera. Boy, I would not have changed a thing had I been in former administrations. You take advantage of the opportunities that are presented to you. So this is not to chastise at all. They did well, and it served the American farmer and rancher well. But I also think this is a signal that says, you know what? A diversified portfolio, whether it's your financial portfolio or it's our ag export portfolio, is always, I think, a wise play, and it's something that we should always shoot for. Never step away from a market. Build on the market. But we've got to diversify, and that is what we're trying to do. And there is business to be had out there. I'll give you an example. Mid last year, my buddy Dowd at USTR and his ag team, I and my team separately developed a list of countries that we thought we'd like to go start getting to know better. We know them, but we haven't spent that much time. If one or the other of us had flipped one country, the lists would have been identical. So we are aligned with our good friends at USTR. Now, whether that takes the form of a formal FTA, you know, that then gets congressional approval, or whether it's, I don't like this word, but tweaks, you know, or whatever it might mean, it means that we're aligned on countries we want to go concentrate on. I'm not going to name them because sometimes we hear back from them that wish I'd have known. But you can imagine, they are countries that are rising in their income. Many of them are rising in population. Many of them we're having some tussles with now because we need to straighten out trade. But longer term, I believe very strongly. Some of you know that I'm a World War II buff, and I hearken back to the days after the war when Japan and Germany and much of the world was just decimated. And look where we have come. Marshall Plan was a big part of that. So if we take the long-term view and not look at quarter-by-quarter results like the corporate financial sector or the NASDAQ, I think we have an opportunity out there, and we must never forget that we are still driving toward feeding 9 to 10 billion, the number varies, by 2050. It's going to take a lot of protein to do that, and it's going to take all of us. So if you look at that mega trend, that just says that we're going through some choppy waters now, absolutely, but the long-term trend says somebody's going to need our quality, our safety, and our quantity of protein, and that in part is what drives me, and it drives this diversification of the portfolio. Africa, you mentioned. We're taking a trade mission to Africa. Ghana, I think, is where we're going. It was Kenya, but there's some safety and security issues there temporarily. I think we have got to get there. There's still a lot of corruption that just sends powerful signals to our business people that it's not the right time. What I'm saying there and in many other parts of the world, that you need to put you, a business person, a commodity group, at least put a toe, maybe an ankle, might even go to a knee deep, be careful if you're going to go waist deeper up, because then you're all in, and that can be a bit riskier. But if you don't start learning those countries, you're going to be behind the game, and we then have the risk of ceding that to China, which I don't think Africa wants. They have told me that. They want to do business with many others, but they certainly want to include the U.S. in that. So they have their own barriers that are slowing that. It's not something that's on our part saying we're not going there, we're not interested. It's more of the dynamics in country.
One last question to squeeze in, Rhonda.
Rhonda Garrison, North Carolina Corn Growers. Going back to the mitigation payments, do you anticipate it being a little more equitable instead of being so heavily weighted towards soybeans?
Yes. Now, let me qualify that. If you looked at the dynamics by which the first round was made, it was equitable. Now, it didn't seem that, but based on the corn that was going to China, it was equitable, and that's very difficult to argue against. But I think we're looking at different methodologies, which is, I think, your point.
Right. Thank you.
All right.
And Bill Northey can answer all those questions. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Carry on question.
Hey, thank you all. I love what you do, and thanks.
Thank you so much.